Welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia. And today the topic of our show is why am I bored in a healthy relationship? One of the most common issues I work with is helping people to change their relationship patterns so they don't keep attracting the narcissist, sociopath, alcoholic, or other toxic and dysfunctional partners. When we grow up in dysfunctional environments, they become familiar to us, and we subconsciously recognize when something feels familiar. Familiar may feel like home in some way, even when home was a dysfunctional environment. Usually, the desire for a safe, healthy, and functional relationship comes from years, even decades, of being with a crazy maker, like a narcissist. But the narcissist may also have his good points. The love bombing phase, for example, may be unparalleled. The initial romance may be a fairy tale dream come true. The thoughts and beliefs you may form in the initial stages of the relationship may be that you have finally met your perfect match, your soulmate, or your twin flame. And then the crap hits the fan. Your perfect world comes crumbling down, and you wonder what happened to Mr. Perfect, who is now Mr. Nightmare. For you men listening, it's the same thing. Although I don't have a lot of men coming to me to change relationship patterns, men do come to me to heal and get beyond a toxic relationship, and maybe to understand what happened. This episode still applies to men, because men can also get bored in healthy relationships, especially when comparing the intensity and sexuality of a borderline personality with a normal, healthy woman. Intensity is a key word here. Toxic relationships are intense. They most often begin very fast and are intense from the beginning. The level of excitement and passion can also be very intense. For many, the level of attention you are receiving is unlike anything you have ever experienced. If you didn't get the attention you needed as a child, you may be hungry for attention, so the amount of focus and attention on you can feel really good. When you have someone texting you 30 times a day or calling and wanting to be with you every opportunity, you may initially enjoy that attention. If you have abandonment issues, you may really enjoy the constant attention that seems to say, I will always be here. I will never leave. And that can feel comforting to someone who fears abandonment. For anyone who's been involved with a narcissist or a sociopath, you know that the love bombing, hyper-focused attention is only temporary. It is a phase that comes with the intention of getting you hooked into a relationship quickly before you can find out who that person really is. When you get hooked in early on, before you see too many red flags, you are already vested in that person. You may already be intimately entwined and have already convinced yourself you have a great guy or gal. Once this belief is established, it's more difficult to change your mind about someone, and the easier it will be to brush those red flags under the proverbial rug and make excuses for his or her behavior. You may find that once the love bombing phase has ended, that the relationship has an intermittent quality about it. You may have experienced intermittent love bombing and intermittent lack of availability. And this sets up an addictive pattern as you wait with bated breath for the attention you were initially showered with. When you go through periods where the love object is not available to you, not calling, not texting, and otherwise dropping out for periods of time before resurfacing again, you may begin to feel insecure. You may begin to wonder what it is that you have done to cause the drop in attention. You may try harder to get that attentiveness back, and at times it may seem your efforts have paid off only to have the love object disappear again. The disappearance could be physically or emotionally. The on-again, off-again quality of the relationship causes you to be destabilized and on edge, with more and more of your focus on the love object, trying to understand what's going on and what you did wrong and why he or she is so inconsistent with your relationship, and so on. Studies show that intermittent reinforcement causes obsessive behavior. When you get the carrot on a consistent basis and then the carrot is taken away, you may adjust to the absence of the carrot and go on with your life. But if that carrot is given and then taken away and then given and then taken away, confusion is created along with an addiction to the possibility of getting that carrot. When in a narcissistic relationship, the intermittent reinforcement is really common, and so is the obsessive focus on the narcissist by the one who has fallen for him or her. It is common that one will feel confused, lost, obsessive, excited, flattened, depressed, anxious, and fearful in these kinds of relationships. The array of emotions ranging from being at the height of excitement and passion to the low of depression and anxiety give one a feeling of being alive, more so in a way that the prey feels alive when it barely escapes the predator. Some of you may reflect back and realize that you had a similar dynamic in your childhood, where you never really knew if mom or dad was going to be nice or mean. You may have built your world around learning to detect a parent's mood so you knew whether it was safe to get closer or if you should back away. You may have even developed a belief that when the toxic parent's mood was bad, hostile, or angry, that somehow you were bad, that you were causing the mood, that it was your fault. And when that parent was kind or loving, you were somehow good and lovable. And children interpret life this way. They blame themselves when a parent is mad at them because they may be told that they're bad or worthless or shameful, or that they just feel that they're somehow flawed and bad. Children may develop a belief that if they were a good little girl or a good little boy, that their parents would love them and treat them well. So they really try hard to be good. But it doesn't matter how hard they try, they still end up being bad. So they develop a belief that they are inherently flawed. This belief morphs with you into adulthood and into your adult relationships. A child who grows up with a deep feeling of shame and inadequacy as a result of abusive, inconsistent parenting will be a perfect match for a toxic partner like the narcissist or a raging alcoholic or both. When you grow up with a belief that you are somehow bad or flawed, even if this belief is now deeply rooted in your subconscious mind, you will be easy to control and manipulate by someone who needs you to take the responsibility for his or her bad behavior. If the toxic partner can get you to believe everything is your fault, then he or she can feel superior and potent in the relationship While you may be feeling inferior and powerless, you become the scapegoat or the fall guy or fall girl. Now let's get back to the subject of this talk. What happens when you go from this toxic dynamic to a relationship with someone who is relatively healthy? Well, we live in a dysfunctional society, so everyone will be a bit dysfunctional, especially if they haven't developed the ability to reflect on themselves and their own behavior. We have a sort of consensus norm, and people who are considered mentally and emotionally healthy fall somewhere in this norm spectrum. These are people who have a pretty good sense of right and wrong, have a certain degree of empathy to where they can imagine how they might feel if they were on the receiving end of a certain behavior. They have an ability to be caring, kind, and respectful to others, especially if others are caring, kind, and respectful to them. Someone who is interested in you romantically, if they are relatively healthy, will most likely show interest in you, and if they are interested in pursuing a dating relationship, will make this clear to you at some point, especially if it's a man. We still have some old-fashioned ideals in our society where many women, especially older women, will wait for the man to make the first move. However, more women are beginning to be assertive when they are interested in someone. A healthy relationship may not start off with a bang. It may move much slower than you're used to. Instead of seeing or hearing from a new love interest every day, 10 times a day, you may only hear from that person once or twice a week. Now, some men who are interested in a woman may contact them more often once the connection has been established, but if you're interested in a man and he doesn't contact you every day, give it time. Don't assume because someone is not contacting you every day that he's not interested in you. He may be afraid of rushing it, or he may just simply be busy with his life. Let's say, ladies, that you've begun a dating relationship with a man, and he is a lovely, kind, and caring man who communicates with you directly and has made his interest in you very clear. Say you hear from him every Wednesday and Friday like clockwork, and he's very consistent. There's no guesswork involved because he's very clear about how he feels about you, but it's not overwhelming because he gives you plenty of time and space. Your buttons aren't going off. You're not having the highs and lows that go with inconsistent contact. You're not questioning your worth and value in this relationship because this guy treats you great and his interest in you is consistent. Without all the highs, lows, on again, off again, hot, cold, loves me, love me not dynamics, you begin to feel a bit restless, even bored. So what is this? Well, it's the absence of drama. There's a certain excitement to drama. Many are addicted to drama and thrive on it in a sort of dysfunctional way. When you've grown up with drama and had a lot of drama in your relationships, drama becomes normal to you. Life without drama feels flat. There are no ups and downs. It's just one solid line. So what do you do with this? Some of you may even pick a fight with this perfectly nice guy and stir up drama so you can get your fix. But guess what? He may not stick around for long because he doesn't like drama. He doesn't thrive on it. He may say she was a really nice girl, but a bit of a drama queen. Healing from our dysfunctional past means learning how to live drama-free. We learn to find comfort in the straight line, in the consistency, in the certainty, And drama begins to feel really uncomfortable so that we can no longer tolerate it. You can only really learn how to be drama-free by being around people who are drama-free. You learn to appreciate stability, consistency, and steadiness. You learn to appreciate always being warm without the extremes of hot and cold. You learn to really appreciate feeling loved no matter what. You can be human and you can make mistakes and still that love is there. You can release the feeling that you need to be perfect in order to be loved. That is an old, dysfunctional dynamic that you don't need to carry around any longer. Many of you have a few close friends who you know will love you no matter what. But when you get involved in a romantic relationship, your perfectionism is triggered and you find yourself on edge, afraid to show who you really are for fear that you will be rejected. At some point, we all need to face our fear of rejection and embrace our true self. We need to develop the belief that who we are is good enough, and if someone doesn't like us for who we are, it has nothing to do with us. If you're with someone who needs you to be perfect, you're likely with a perfectionist or a narcissist or both, and either way, it isn't good. You have to love who you are first and foremost. And if you're not there yet, maybe you need to take a hiatus from dating until you've developed a little more self-love and self-acceptance. It's true that if we don't really love ourselves, we can't really love anyone else. People struggle with this truth because many of you who struggle with self-worth believe that you love others just fine, you just don't love yourself. You may believe this is true, and you may act loving and kind to others, but the closer you get to someone, the more your self-loathing will get in the way. You may find yourself jealous or competitive. You may project. You may have all kinds of painful feelings coming up. This is most likely to happen in very close relationships, like with a significant other, because the closer one gets, the more intense the mirror. Our closest relationships are our deepest reflections. It's always good after a series of bad relationships that you take some time off and really get to know yourself, really get to love yourself, and then you are really ready for a healthy relationship. Remember, when you are steeped in self-loathing, you're much more likely to attract someone who is also self-loathing and may project that self-loathing onto you. If you are self-loving, you're much more likely to attract someone who is self-loving, and you will be able to have a truly loving relationship with each other. What do you do if you find yourself feeling bored with someone? Well, take inventory and write down the qualities you see in that person that you like and also the qualities that you don't like. Do the qualities you like greatly outweigh the qualities that you don't like? Remember, you will never like everything about a person. It's only in the beginning of a relationship we tend to see the good and ignore the not so good. And as you move deeper into the relationship, even the qualities you initially liked may start to annoy you a bit. This is life. This is why they say love is blind. We can't expect perfectionism in the other any more than we can expect it in ourselves. So the more that we accept ourselves as we are without imposing that perfectionism on ourselves, the more we will be able to accept another person as they are without imposing perfectionism upon them. So be sure to write on your list whether a quality that you perceive as not so good is a deal breaker or not. Can you live with it? Or will it drive you crazy for the rest of your life? Remember, ladies, we don't want to approach men with a fixer-upper attitude. Men are not fixer-uppers. They're not houses. They are men. What you see is what you get, so accept them as they are, or move on. Don't get involved with the idea that you can change them. Women really do have the bad habit of falling in love with the potential in a man and then going to work on trying to get him to fulfill the potential that she sees in him. And this is a bad habit. When you fall in love with a man and then immediately start the repair project, he's not going to feel very loved. On the contrary, he's likely to feel inadequate and/or annoyed. So if on paper he looks pretty good, why don't you just give him a chance? That is, if you've done sufficient work on yourself and you're feeling pretty good about you. The relationship will either grow on you or it won't. If you've dated for a period of time and you just aren't feeling any fire or desire, then you know you've given it your best shot. I know I tried to make it work with someone who I just wasn't attracted to, but he's a really great guy. And I gave it a fair chance, but the attraction never grew. Because of my history with toxic men, I thought that I was destined to only be attracted to narcissists. But what the nice guy taught me was that I really did deserve to be treated well. And after that, I could never go back to crazy again. When you change your internal attraction factor, you begin to attract a very different energy. So you see more healthy people beginning to show up in your life. So stay conscious, stay aware, pay attention to the red flags, but don't be paranoid. If you're paranoid, you aren't ready. So take more time to love you. Don't approach a relationship with a fault-finding mentality. If you love yourself, trust yourself, and stay aware. You can enjoy getting to know a man and stay involved as long as it feels good on a consistent basis. Of course, there are issues in every relationship, but they don't need to be huge dramas. There may be times something bothers you or you don't feel good about something, and you need to talk about what you're feeling. A lot of people coming from toxic relationships are afraid to talk about their feelings because they're used to their feelings being invalidated and approached with defensiveness. If the person you're with becomes defensive and can't handle having an open, honest conversation about the issues in your relationship, this is a really huge red flag. How can you have a healthy relationship with someone who is afraid to talk about issues in the relationship? This goes for you too. You have to learn healthy communication skills. Check out the book Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. Practice your communication skills. Practice listening and watch your own reactivity and defensiveness. In order to have a healthy relationship, we have to be healthy. We have to be healthy. We have to heal our fragmented selves and find our wholeness. A woman once asked me if the man I was with was my other half, and I smiled and said I like to think of him as another whole. The days of two halves coming together to make a whole are over. We're called to our own wholeness, and this is of the utmost importance. We need to own our wholeness if we're to have a whole and healthy relationship with another. We don't want to seek out a desperate, needy half a person who is looking for someone to complete them. No Jerry Maguire's here. We need to be seeking out a whole, healthy person who is looking for someone to complement them. We all need to realize that it is the dysfunctional patterns within ourselves that cause us to be attracted to dysfunctional relationships. In order to attract healthy relationships, we have to heal the dysfunctional patterns within ourselves. And this takes some time, and we may come up against our own dysfunction so that we can break through to higher levels of functioning. When you go drama-free, life may seem a bit boring at first, but perhaps you could learn to replace the word boring with another word, such as stable, steady, or consistent. You may even find that the word reliable fits. So if you're looking out your window and you see a couple yelling and screaming at each other and throwing things in their yard, you can bet the adrenaline across the street is pumping hard. There is excitement, intensity, and drama. But you can just close your blinds, make a cup of tea, and curl up with a good book, knowing this is no longer your life. Be grateful. Enjoy the peace while your neighbors are picking up the pieces. If you're struggling to pick up your own pieces so that you can have peace in your life, reach out and get help. You don't have to do this alone. Often a trained professional can see what you are not quite capable of seeing and offer the insight, the wisdom, and guidance to help you to break through the toxic and dysfunctional patterns that are keeping you stuck. Investing in yourself is the very best thing you can ever do. Thank you for listening, and if you'd like to find out more about my work, please visit narcissismfree.com and pathbacktoself.com. Blessings, and have a great day.